This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
I'm Andrew Johnstone, and this is The Last Breath, Hospice Waikato's podcast about death and dying. Sometime in 2020, I got a message from a Facebook friend called Costa Botes. I'd always wondered why such a prominent filmmaker had sent me a friend request. Turns out he thought I was Andrew Johnson, a bloke he went to school with. Realising his mistake, it stuck around because of my cow stories. Back then, I was working as a herdsman and was posting daily about the cows in my care, and Costa was thinking that it might make for a nice film. "Can I come up and talk to you about it?" he asked. "Sure," I said, giving it no more thought. He duly turns up, but there's no talk. He whips out his camera, attaches a microphone to my shirt, and starts filming, giving me no time to catch my breath or even think about what was happening. When The Cows Come Home debuted at the 2022 New Zealand International Film Festival and then went on to plan cinemas all across the country. It received rave reviews from critics and audiences alike, and after its theatrical run, it found a new life playing to passengers on Air New Zealand's international flights. All through this, Costa was in remission from prostate cancer and doing pretty good. That all changed in 2024 when his kidney started to struggle. Over the last year, he's been in and out of hospital, and early in the first week of November 2025, his doctor said it was time to check into hospice. I was going to go down to Wellington to see him, but Debs, his wife, said that he was struggling and there was a good chance that I'd arrive and he'd be out of it. So we said our goodbyes over FaceTime, and here's how it went.
I think I've figured out how to record, so I think we're all go.
What do you mean? What happened yesterday?
Well, I was just a bit emotional, and I closed it all off without saving, and I lost it all.
Oh, Andrew, come on. Fucking hell, I can't do all that again.
No, you'd have to do it. I don't want you to do that again.
You'll have to work off your memory.
I've got it all in my memory.
Oh, Andrew.
I want to talk to you about something different. I want to talk to you about what you're going through. I want to talk to you about being in hospice, about dying.
Fantastic.
Really positive, fun stuff. But something you said to me yesterday really struck me, and I think it's really important. You said that you weren't going to go and battle cancer. You just wanted to get on with your life and do the best you could.
Yes.
So when did you know that something was not quite right? When did you feel impelled to go to the doctor and get checked out?
Oh, probably around 2015. And I got my diagnosis in 2016 after I was given a referral to a specialist. A biopsy. And, the results came back. Unfortunately, not to me. They went to my doctor, who promptly went on holiday and just left it. So it dragged on for another couple of weeks. Nice. And then I only really found out, I went to the doctor's while she was still away on holiday. I went to the same, practice. And there was another doctor there. And he said, "Oh, by the way, there's a note here. Have you seen it?" And I said, "No, I have not seen it." He showed me, and I just about fell through the floor, because there it was. Cancer. Metastasized. Yeah. I think they were just too late. Because it metastasized, they couldn't do anything in the way of surgery or anything like that. So, anyway, my oncologist, who had not met before, Now I had an oncologist, and he gave me a few options, one of which was to do the full Grand Slam chemotherapy, and then followed by radiotherapy, which I did. And I felt much better after all that. The chemotherapy was rough, you know, 5 weeks of it. That was tough. And then I had 25 days of radiotherapy. I went going every day, and they'd zap me. And yeah, by then I felt all right. Yeah, and by the end of that month, I felt well. You know, I was able to get on, and that's been the case, you know, for years. I've really beaten the odds, but it's got to catch up with you sometime, and it has now.
So, what were you feeling prior to 2015? You just weren't feeling yourself?
Oh yeah, trouble peeing essentially.
Right.
Trouble peeing. Yeah. But now, I don't know why the doctor ignored it or thought it would be okay. I don't understand to this day, to be honest. A bit of denial there.
So it was prostate cancer, and you had your treatment, and then you just got on. What was your attitude towards it? You weren't going to battle it. You weren't going to take on this grand.
Well, there was nothing to battle, Andrew. You know, it wasn't affecting me. So there was nothing to battle. I just got on with life. Well, the one thing that changed is my attitude to life. I stopped pissing around. I made choices quickly. I was decisive. And I savoured life, you know. Literally, the sun would hit me in the morning and I'd go, I'm so glad, you know. Every cancer person will tell you this, that your attitude towards life changes. You become much more positive, or try to be, and you don't muck around. Yeah. I don't think I ever did, really, but...
So when you met me, which was maybe... When did we meet? Was it 2020?
Yeah. Late 2020, early 2021.
So, yeah. How were you feeling in early 2021?
Well, as you could see, I was reasonably fit. You know, I could walk around the fields, but I didn't have as much oomph. You know, one day I walked 12 kilometres. I was pretty tired, but I was able to function. You know, it didn't impede me. It didn't stop me. It's really after that things started to go AWOL.
I remember when we were together working on that film When the Cows Come Home, and you told me about prostate cancer, and you started to explain things to me. Well, it was actually a really wonderful time, because when you're working on a project with somebody like that, you're not just working on a project, you're getting to know somebody. And we started sharing things about each other. And I remember saying to you, how's it affected your sex life? And you said, well, maybe she's grateful now that I'm not climbing all over her all the time, which was pretty funny, you know.
That's true.
A testament to your stoic attitude.
Well, I think there comes a point in every relationship when the erotic falls away. Yeah, I shouldn't really say any more than that.
So you did this big process. We made this film together. You went home to Wellington. you edited it, you went and did all the things you had to do, like raise money to finish it off, and then you took it through the New Zealand International Film Festival that year in 2022, I think it was, and...
Yeah, that was a battle.
Was it a battle?
It's truly a battle. Yeah, not so much with the film festival, but with the film commission, because I needed money, or I wanted money. I thought I deserved a decent amount for the post-production.
Is he breathing?
Oh,
yes, he is.
And, anyway.
Yes.
Yes, let me... I needed a certain amount for post-production, fairly generous amount, because I wanted to pay Tom, I wanted to pay Phil Burton, who was doing the sound, and I wanted to pay my mate Jason Stutter, who was doing the colour grading. That's all that needed doing, but it came to a certain amount, and I needed the money. And yes. I thought it would have been a problem. But then it turned out, they said, oh, well, we've spent our allocation for the year. I said, what do you mean? So that started a process. And in the finish, bless them, the Film Commission director, CEO, what the hell, what do you want to call him? He paid me out of... He has an allocation for projects that he can spend at his discretion. And he paid me what I needed out of that. And then I was able to get everything going with all the post-production. And I can't remember whether the film festival... had said yes by then or not. Oh, yeah, there was all that as well, that's right. Because they need conditions. Everyone needed conditions. And let's just say it was quite onerous to get to the start line. But we did. It all lined up. I got the money, did the work, presented it to the film festival. And they said, yeah, righto, let's go. And then the really good news after that was that Vendetta Films came in with an offer to distribute. Now, that I can't tell you what that's worth. You know, even if the film never makes a dime, the fact that you've done that is a real feather in your cap, you know. And, of course, it meant that the film was going to get a cinema release. Well, the cinema release was a little bit mediocre, and it fell away quickly, but for the time that it was on, I still, you know, get people who saw it here and there, and it lost money, of course. of course.
But I think many more saw it on Air New Zealand flights all over the world.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
We're still hearing from people that saw it on flights.
That was through Vendetta. They put it up there. You know. So they did try. They tried everything.
So through all this, I mean, I was unaware of a lot of this. You know, I'm back home on the farm and you're down in Wellington and you're wheeling and dealing and I didn't see any of this. This must have taken a great deal of effort. And then... when I came down to Wellington for the film festival debut, you were bouncing around. You were walking me around the city, showing me where you made this film and that film and memories from over here and memories from over there. And you were full of beans and optimism and excited about what you'd achieved.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you were, absolutely.
I don't recall.
It was wonderful to be around you. I wish I had more energy myself to keep up with you. And then...
Yeah, I could still walk around then, as opposed to now. Anyway, carry on.
And I had no indication that, you know, you told me that you had prostate cancer, that you were sick, but there was no indication that it was a big deal. And then that all dies down and we go back to our lives, and a couple of years pass, and your kidneys start to play up, don't they?
Yeah.
And you're in hospital again.
Yeah. That's right. Again and again and again, until I'm a withered husk.
And then,
this is where I am now.
And then your last visit to the hospital, which was only last week, they said it's time to move into hospice care. Is that correct?
That's right.
And what did you think in that moment?
I thought, hang on, I'm just saying goodbye to my brother. Oh, thanks, mate. Thanks for everything.
That's right.
Huh. Okay. I'll catch you later then.
Yeah, see you for our chat.
What did I think in that moment? I thought, it's time. That's what I thought. I'm ready. Like I told you, I'm not battling it. I'm going with it. I'm living with it until it kills me. Yeah. And as you can hear from my voice, that slowed me right down there. But I've still got a little bit of time. Yeah. My main anxiety now is to work on this film that I'm trying to finish. Everyone seems determined to interrupt me and stop me. It's okay. I'm happy to talk to you because you arranged it, but yeah, I'm gonna have to be even more stringent and, you know, looking after my time.
That's a remarkable thing from my perspective, Costa. It's a remarkable thing. Here you are facing the penultimate challenge of your life, and you're focused on your art. You're going to get this one last project finished.
If I can, but my God, at the moment I'm looking for a clip. I know the name of it, and that's the only one that I can't find. And day after day, it's always things like that. Where has number 215 gone? Where has it gone? Why is it not there? I can't see it.
How are you feeling within yourself? How are you feeling mentally?
Huh?
How are you feeling within yourself?
All right. Yeah.
Positive?
Oh, yeah, totally. Else I wouldn't be doing this. I'd be just giving up. Going to sleep. No, I feel good.
But tired as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got to work through the tiredness. You see me closing my eyes quite often.
Yeah. Then that's what struck me when we spoke yesterday, you know, was the fact that just the way that your attitude towards all this, it really surprised me. And well, in a really positive way. It was fantastic. I couldn't believe it.
Good.
Which is why I wanted to talk to you again, because I wanted to share what you're going through and...
No, because you buggered up the thing in the first place.
I did. Well,
be honest.
Just to explain to everybody, I recorded Costa yesterday. We had the most wonderful conversation, really profound. And by the end of it, I was feeling quite... I'm an emotional guy. I was feeling quite emotional and in a positive way, not in a sad, I'm grieving kind of way. I was just wonderful to connect with you again, and I felt the love bubbling up, and you know, I started to remember why I loved you so much and why I was so fond of you and why, you know, I consider you to be one of the best people I've ever met in my life, and I forgot to save it, didn't I?
Oh, don't do it again, Andrew.
No, this time I've rehearsed Costa, and I've made notes. No blubbing. I've made notes.
No hitting the emotional button. No cancelling everything by mistake. Let's get it right.
Have you got... Sometimes people dwell on regrets and things like that. Are you feeling anything like that at this time?
No. No, I'm not. I do not dwell on any regrets. In fact, I'm trying to clear everything up. You know, one thing is I hadn't spoken to my ex in 14 years, which was not my choice. And we had a lot of shit to clear up. And she came in. And that meant a lot to me. So that, in terms of regret, that's a big one. You know, what happened between us, how we separated. It was a bit of a mess. And anyway. Anyway, we had a good session, and I think I can say that's done now. You know, I mean, you know, I don't want to go back, obviously. But I hurt someone so badly, and I just wanted her to know how sorry I am. But it couldn't be otherwise. So, yeah. Nice to clear that one up. That was the big one. Other than that, no, I haven't really screwed anyone up or done anyone down. And I'm getting some tremendous feedback from people that honestly it's very powerful. And you know, to think you're loved like that, why would I have any regrets? Hell no. No. And it would.
Often people say all the things that they want to say after the person has died. They say it in eulogies at their funeral. I guess one of the advantages of being in hospice and is people are coming to see you and telling you what they feel while you're still here.
That's right, I've got time. I had a friend come in just this morning for that very purpose. She just wanted to say goodbye. Tell me how she felt about me, and she was gone. And you know, that's all that's needed.
I remember you telling me, when we were working on the film, you telling me about Zoe McIntosh, a young filmmaker you'd been mentoring. And this week, on her Substack page, she wrote the most extraordinary piece about the value of mentorship.
Yeah.
And about artists who fly under the radar. They don't get all the big accolades and the big awards. But nevertheless, what they do is important. And it's an incredible tribute. It must be wonderful to read that.
It was. It was wonderful to read that she's finally learned how to spell.
She can't spell?
She can now, apparently. I was used to pull her up on it. Used to correct her grammar and her spelling. Oh, I don't need to do that now. She wrote wonderfully. It was good to see. Apart from the content, which was obviously... Yeah, very positive for me. But yeah, that's me, the guy that flies under the radar, never gets the tribute, but I keep going anyway. That's me.
But does that matter? Because the people who know you know what you do.
Oh, you know, I've got to be honest. Yeah, it does matter. It does matter. I just feel like I've always missed. You know, you can miss by an inch, or you can miss by a mile. And I feel like I've missed by inches consistently. And I always wondered why. And I think it's the point of view that I have. It's not a popular one. It's not a sentimental one. You know, it just doesn't quite connect with the popular soul. Although, oddly, I think it's more about the distribution of films, that what gets in the way of them being seen. Because when I've shown my films to people and they've sat down and watched them, they've really liked them. I had a friend last night. She said she sat down to watch Never Cry Wolf, which is a wonderful film. And I told her it was very influential on my work in Last Dogs of Winter. And she said, well, I watched them back to back. And I thought your film really, really held up. Like it, you know, and this happens a lot. People had tremendous feedback, you know. So I don't think it's the work. That's not the problem. I think I do good work. And it does appeal to people, particularly, you know, some films like Last Dogs of Winter and, well, all of them actually, right through. Act of Kindness, Angie, and now When the Cows Come Home. So, if any one person sits down and watches them, they sort of work, you know? They take you where you need to go. But the trouble is the distribution is so shit that they don't get to be seen. So, you know, you're not on the critical circuit. They'll review the latest bloody Disney film about impossible things. You know, and that's it. The reviewers only do a couple of films a week or a couple of months. It used to be the case that you could get reviewed in a major paper. Well, go whistle now. So if the best you can do is get reviewed by a blogger, well, it's a pretty small audience for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's the problem.
Well, that all that said, though, Costa, When the Cows Come Home was reviewed widely at Television New Zealand, the most Kiwi film ever.
Yeah.
You got accolades. Is it? Would I be overreaching to suggest that you've made two masterpieces, Forgotten Silver and When the Cows Come Home?
Well, I actually think a lot of the others as well. But thank you, yeah. Well, if I had to pick two, those are the ones I'd pick. But I think Act of Kindness is a really good film. That was very hard to put together. And in the end, we got a coherent piece out of a lunchbox full of footage. And Angie was a totally different story. I finally got a coherent film after 4 years of trying. And I think that one goes somewhere. Yeah. So, you know, I'll put up an argument for any one of them. But certainly Forgotten Silver might be the best thing I ever did, followed by When the Cows Come Home.
You've finished When the Cows Come Home, you go back to Wellington, and then last year you write your book about the making of Forgotten Silver.
Yeah. Oh, that had been a long-held ambition. I'd wanted to do it for a long time and never got around to it. Well, I found myself in hospital. So I asked Deb, my wife, to bring in the laptop, and I started writing. And I got about 30 pages in, and I realised I'd hit a groove that I could keep going after that. Yeah, so that turned into something. But again, I had to do it all myself. I sent it to, you know, different publishers. Nothing. Not even an acknowledgement of the manuscript. That was depressing. And, you know, I guess there's a right way and a wrong way to do things. And I was doing it the wrong way. But anyway, long story short, I looked into Kindle self-publishing and I figured, oh, there you go. I can do my own cover. I can set it all up, hit go, and I've got a book.
And the book's been well received.
Very well received, yeah. Again, the same bloody problem. Who's going to read it if they don't know about it, right? but the people who have read it have really liked it. And what is especially gratifying is there's been always been a note of surprise, you know, like, I don't know what I was expecting. You know, I thought this was going to be a tough slog, but it wasn't. You know, I read it really quickly. You know, that's music to my ears. That means the text flows and it makes sense. Yeah. No, I've had some lovely, lovely feedback from friends and people, and the occasional stranger who's sort of come across it all unawares. I hope that happens more often.
And there's been a couple of people in the film world who have read it, I think, haven't they?
I don't know. Like who?
I've seen it mentioned a couple of times somewhere.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I haven't.
Well, here, so, you know,
I should mention it to me.
So you finish your last film, which you're really happy with, and then you write your book, which you're really happy with. Then you're in hospital, and now you're in hospice, and hopefully you'll finish one more film. So
yeah.
that must be satisfying.
Yeah, it is. It is, Andrew. Yeah, it is. I've done a lot. Yeah. It is very satisfying. I'm so glad I got the book done, because that'll live on beyond me. Even if no one reads it.
Can I ask, how's
Can we mention that the book's about the making of Forgotten Silver? And it's actually quite humorous. It goes into a lot of funny anecdotes and such. Yeah.
And whoever's listening to the podcast, if you don't know about Forgotten Silver, it's screened on television, TV One, on a Sunday night in 1995, and
yeah,
it was a mockumentary that about a guy called Colin McKenzie, a great Kiwi filmmaker that nobody knew about, a pioneering filmmaker who discovered how to make colour film, who made great big epics in the rugged bush in the South Island, wasn't it? And and of course it was all made up, He filmed Richard Pearse flying his plane.
Yes, he did.
He did.
Yeah.
And it was all made up. And it was, but it was a really insightful and wonderful Kiwi-style piss take of our national character and our own mythology of ourselves. And as I said to you yesterday, I can remember clearly sitting down and watching that. I was living in a cow shed at the time, believe it or not. I was so poor, but I did have a TV. And I remember sitting on the cold concrete floor watching that film and believing every second of it. And then the next day when the news broke, unlike a lot of people who are quite annoyed, I just laughed and I thought, well done. Well done.
That's a lovely summary, Andrew. Thank you. Yeah, that's a very accurate summary.
I still believe it's right up there in the pantheon of the greatest Kiwi films.
Well, you know, who am I to say? but I agree with you.
Nobody else has made a film like it. It's really unusual. It's totally unique. And it's just so well made and so well written.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it.
Costa, how's your mother feeling?
My mother?
Yeah.
She's, I suppose she's sad that she's not here with me, but quite honestly, I don't want her here.
Why is that?
I don't want her here bawling and wailing over me. That does me no good at all. Yes, I know. I've talked to her a couple of times already. She knows the score. And if she wants to FaceTime me, we can do that any time. But honestly, she's too much, so, yeah.
I only asked that because yesterday, you know, we were talking about my own family tragedy. And, you know, and it's always been in my mind, you know, the parents never get over the loss of a child. And I'm thinking, you know, you've already lost a sister and now you're dying. And I just wondered, you know, I just felt for your mum.
Oh, thank you. You're an empathetic man. But my mum is something else, you know. She really is. She can be quite hard to take.
But she does make the most magnificent desserts.
True that. The heaviest anyway.
So yesterday when we chatted, you pointed the camera around and you showed me the room you're in at hospice, and you said it looks like a hotel room. You're there with Deb, your wife, your beloved wife, the woman. You are the most anti-woo-woo man I've ever known, not a superstitious bone in your body, and yet you had a dream one night that you were going to meet her, and you did. And you've had a wonderful life together. And so you're there with her. She's sleeping in the same room. And you've got Beano and, I can never remember the other dog's name.
Chewy.
Beano and Chewy. And they're there with you as well.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. They really make every effort to sort of make you comfortable and happy. And so there's no problem Deb coming in or the dogs. And it's nice. It just feels like a natural transition.
Did the dogs cuddle up on bed with you?
Not with me, no. They go with Deb. Yeah.
First day.
Yeah, sometimes they do, but it's a long way to the top. it's quite hard. They can't jump into the bed. Someone has to place them. And my legs sort of get sore if a heavy weight lands on them, you know. So I don't particularly want it anyway.
Are you in much pain?
No.
The painkillers are taking care of it?
Yeah, I feel pain during transitional moments because they've got to move me, you see. If I'm in a sitting position right now, and I'll be that way for quite a while, but later on they're going to have to turn me over, and yeah, it's a little bit of creaking and groaning then. And, you know, sleeping position, I like to be on my side rather than on my back, so that affects me. Well, I'll say the least about it, but if they have to change my nappy, then there's a bit of rumbling and rolling. But no, I'm not. Generally, I'm not in pain. I'm generally fine. It's not an issue. Whatever the painkillers are, they're probably putting me to sleep. But, no, I'm fine. Feel good. Just feel tired. Tired, tired, tired all the time.
And how are you feeling about Deb?
Oh, what do you mean? I love that woman.
Are you worried about her when you've gone?
Not really. She's quite capable. I worry about her while she's here. When I do have bouts of pain, and she has to watch me going through it, like yesterday, it was hard. I couldn't go, you know, like I couldn't. I badly needed to go for a poo, but I just couldn't. And it kept coming and coming and coming. So all day long, I had this recurring pain. If you'd asked me then, I would have said, Jesus, I'm in agony. And so we had to go to escalating series of actions to try and deal with it. Climaxing in the worst, which is an enema. And, well, it took an hour or so, an hour and a half, but something finally happened. And it happened again this morning. It happened again about half an hour ago. They've got to come and change me again. So this is my life now. It's stuff, you know, you wouldn't think about it. Go to the toilet, wipe your ass, done. I've got to call two nurses to come and clear me up. But Jesus, it's such a relief. Such a relief.
You know, I better start thinking about letting you go because you're looking tired and it's almost 2 o'clock, and between 2 and 5, you're working on your film with no interruptions.
Correct.
And I'm not going to impinge upon that. I'm going to ask you one more difficult question, and this is a question I've asked everybody in your position. Are you feeling any fear?
No. No, I'm not. I don't know what I'll feel as I slip away, obviously. Maybe I'll feel fear then, but not at the moment, no. I feel a blessed acceptance of what will be. I just want my end to be grateful. And absent of pain. I don't feel any fear. No.
That's what I'm feeling about you as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to blubber?
You probably.
Okay. Watch those buttons, Andrew.
But it's not those kind of tears. It's just tears of love. That's all.
Good. Those are the ones I want.
And appreciation. You, barreled into my life, rang me up, said, can I come and visit, talk to you about making a film? I actually believed you, I actually thought we were going to sit down and talk. You got out of your car, grabbed your cameras and started filming, and away we went. You didn't give me a choice, didn't give me time to think about it.
I didn't have a choice, and I saw gold straight away.
I wandered around for the next few weeks like a bewildered lamb.
When I got out of the car and you took me into the little paddock with Maggie and Tilly, it was inevitable. Everywhere I pointed the camera was gold. And then when the cows came, when you were playing the music to them, that was fantastic. And I think one of the best times I've ever had was being surrounded by the herd and just being right in the middle of them and listening to all their bellies and their chewing. That was tremendous. So, you know, that was worth the price of admission.
I remember watching you in the paddock surrounded by 50 or 60 cows.
Yeah.
They all came in real close and they're sniffing you and they're licking you and snorting and grunting as cows do, and they were feeling very, very comfortable.
Yeah, that was great. That was some of the best stuff I filmed. And I think it was after that that you told me about your sister, your poor dead sister, and what had happened to her. And I just knew that was a catalyst. It just seemed to explain everything about you. Well, not everything, you know, but it felt like a family kind of destroyed, you know. And I don't know if that's actually the case, but I just thought that was really important to document somehow. In a way that was sensitive and sincere without being exploitative.
I remember being at the Hautapu Cemetery with you, looking at my sister's grave, and it's funny how that tragedy never goes away. Sometimes you don't think about it for years, and there we were, and it just came back. It just hit me like a wall of something. I don't know. And I was very upset and I was crying and I felt very awkward with you pointing the camera at me, but I sort of, when the film came out and I saw it for the first time, I really, really appreciated your sensitivity.
Thank you.
You could have milked that moment and you didn't. You were very restrained. You were very sensitive to my feelings. Really appreciated that.
Well, it was actually worse for your mother. And she was quite resistant. And your father certainly was. Your father didn't want a bar of it. And he kept saying, no, 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 no. I thought, okay. But your mother, bless her, she turned around and she said, I'll do it for Andrew. And, well, I knew I had her then. Jesus, did I move fast with the lighting? Not fast enough. I could have taken more care, but it was like important to get talking before it was too late or before she had second thoughts. And she opened right up about that incident and really made the scene. Yeah.
I watched the film maybe 3 or 4 months ago. I watched it through in full, and his dad died about a year after that.
Yeah.
And he wasn't one for expressing his emotions. He wasn't one for talking. He wasn't one for having photographs taken.
And, hell no.
And there he was. There he was on the screen. There was Dad, exactly as he was in life. Fantastic memory. You captured him. He's there forever.
He didn't want to talk about anything except the farm and dairy farming. I thought, okay, fair enough. But once he was talking, he talked about how he found it hard to send cows off for slaughter. And, you know, that was important to see that. But, oh, gosh, he was hard. He was very hard. Anyway, I'm glad I got those little bits of him that I did.
Yeah, he was a very closed-off man in many ways.
Your sister called him the most emotionally constipated man she ever knew.
Really? Yeah, well, she's not wrong. I remember once I tried to hug him. I hadn't seen him for a few years, and I came home after a long time away, went to give him a hug. He erupted like a volcano. No touching.
No touching.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But I'm grateful that you got what you got from him, because
I still
respond to my dad, and it was nice to see him on screen.
Crusty old bugger. He opened right up at the end after he saw the film at the screening. It was all how fellow well met. Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah. I think, oh, Jesus, mate, a little bit of trust would have gone a long way, you know. But no, some people are like that. They're just so scared of something. Yeah. Here comes a helicopter landing on the roof of Wellington Hospital.
It's time. It's... Was that a nice drink? Was that a sour drink? I heard that you were very keen you're keen on sour drinks at the moment.
God, I spilled it down my front, of course. Bloody hell. Okay. Never mind.
Doesn't spoil the shot.
Okay. It's almost 2 o'clock. You've got to get on with editing the film. So the subject of the film is Caitlin Smith, the singer from Auckland. Have you got a title for the film yet?
Oh, well, it's very early days, but Caitlin Sings.
Okay. Everybody listen out for Caitlin Sings. It'll be in cinemas soon.
No, it won't, but... just want to get something coherent together. Yeah. Getting there. I just have to keep redoing things because this program has got a mind of its own. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, great.
Hey, thanks. Okay. Thanks for giving me some more of your time.
You just you did get me to repeat everything. So, you wily bugger.
Hey, who was my mentor? Do you know?
Yeah, but I didn't hit the wrong buttons and fuck everything up.
Listen, everything I learnt from you, my life now is talking to people every single day and recording their stories, and all the valuable things that I apply every day, I learnt from you. So it's your own fault.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's good, Andrew. I'm glad I've nudged you into a direction where you can exercise your talents as an extremely empathetic human being who can actually write, you know. When you summarise a film or summarise an action, it's clear and it's an accurate thing. So you're doing it in a oral medium, of course. But you could just as easily do it in a written form if you wanted to. I've stopped.
I appreciate that, Costa. Having a compliment from you really is a really valuable thing, because you just don't dish them out that easily. I appreciate that you believe in me. It really does mean something to me.
Good. Because I do. So keep doing what you do. I hope you can derive an income from it sooner or later.
Yeah.
Because that would be good for you. You know. But anyway, it's worthwhile for its own sake, I suppose. Okay.
Love you, Costa.
Love you, Andrew.
Good luck with the film.
Thanks. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
See you, man. And...
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.